Welcome to another exclusive podcast from Pituitary Warm Lips. Today, we are thrilled to welcome our friend and frequent contributor, Linda Rio. As many of you know, Linda is a marriage and family therapist and has contributed several excellent and very popular articles to Pituitary Warm Lips. Linda is an accomplished health professional, author, and lecturer. In her recent book, The Hormone Factor in Mental Health, Bridging the Mind-Body Gap, Linda discusses the many factors related to endocrine imbalances, physical and mental health. You can find more information on the book by going to lindarillo.com or clicking on the link on this podcast. Linda, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jorge, for that introduction. I am most honored to be asked to present here today. Thank you.
You are very welcome. We are really delighted you are here. Let me start by asking you, why would a marriage and family therapist have an interest in pituitary disorders?
Jorge, I agree that my involvement and interest in pituitary and other endocrine disorders seems out of place. First of all, for your listeners and understanding, a marriage and family therapist, or an MFT, is one of the five core mental health professionals accepted by the U.S. government. MFTs are not physicians, so we don't prescribe medications. And each of the mental health professions has specific training and expertise, so it is important to ask questions to be sure it's a good fit for whoever you see eventually. Within family therapy, there is now a growing number of specialists in what we call medical family therapy. These are mental health professionals who are trained alongside of medical residents and who often work in hospitals or closely aligned medical practices, usually in primary care. I was trained as an MFT to look at what we call the family system, or any particular group or system of people or units, and how they interact and affect one another. It is because of this training that when I first became aware that even pituitary tumors existed, I was already trained to see how members in a family connect and communicate, that it just began to, I began to apply this thinking of concepts to the body, especially the endocrine system. It all just began to make sense that something like a tumor on a critical little gland can interact with areas of the brain that are also involved in mood regulation and would affect a person's behavior and overall mental health. The most important reason I opened my eyes to all of this, because this really was way outside the comfort zone of my original training, was actually hearing the deeply emotional stories from patients and their family members. Each story is unique, but so very many tell of the months to years to decades of symptoms that are just not noticed or recognized by their physicians or mental health professions. The delays in getting properly diagnosed, then treated, causes so many more problems in life that I am trained to address. Once I heard these stories, I just had to learn more and to try to make a change.
Yes, the delay in diagnosis stories are certainly deeply emotional. We hear them constantly on our forums. And unfortunately, they are so prevalent, it makes the need for professionals like you with your skills so very critical. So how is the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis specifically involved in mental health?
The general public and even some physicians and mental health practitioners are unaware of how intimately the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal glands interact and affect mental health. Some researchers have even used the term limbic hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis because the limbic area of the brain, the area most thought to involve emotions, is so influenced by the HPA. There does seem to be a greater awareness of the interconnectedness and complexity of the endocrine system with other organs throughout the body. There are many examples, but one is a study of the neurotransmission of serotonin and the HPA. Antidepressants are also known to help regulate HPA function. It is important to understand that this is all dependent upon what we call feedback loops that work similarly to a home heating and air conditioning system. When it gets too warm, the heat shuts off. When it gets too cool, the heat goes on, all to keep the house at a steady temperature. When the body is working as it should, the HPA helps to regulate many systems, including those that affect mood.
Now, that's a very interesting analogy of temperature and mood. So what is the relationship between stress and or psychological or physical trauma and pituitary disorders?
Jorge, this is one of the key areas that caused me to become interested and want to learn more about pituitary tumors. We have known for many years that our bodies are designed to handle short-term or brief stress quite well. In fact, it's built into us to react quickly to an imminent or life-threatening stress, commonly known as fight-or-flight response. However, if a stress is extreme or becomes chronic, it can have a maladaptive effect on a variety of physiological functions, including growth, reproduction, body metabolism, and immunity. Severe stressors during important growth periods of childhood can cause particular vulnerability to a child's growing body. Stress basically is activation of the HPA axis or our stress response system. When severe or chronic stress is encountered in infancy and early childhood years, it can increase the chances of later life development of many disorders, including depression and anxiety. Adults diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, for example, have been shown to have an increased HPA reactivity and cortisol levels. In Cushing's disease, another example, it has been observed that often there have been significant life events or stressors preceding the onset of symptoms. Environmental factors or external stressful events have been shown to play a part in the etiology or the beginnings or origins of prolactinomas, as well as in Cushing's. The research is still investigating what, if any, direct or indirect connections can be made between trauma, severe stress, and the later development of diseases such as pituitary tumors. But it seems evident that there is indeed a link between any severe stress and the development of physiological as well as psychological disturbance.
This is such a fascinating subject. I can imagine the research in this area must be equally interesting. Now, this next question focuses on a discussion I had, a couple of months ago with Dr. Blevins, one of the many discussions. But in essence, Dr. Blevins makes a distinction between disease and illness. He believes that a disease process, acromegaly for example, is simply that, and that the illness is a reflection of the effect of the hormone levels on the patient's body, based on the different tissue sensitivities to growth hormone and IGF-1, the way that a person responds to being sick, the effect it has on their families, their workplace, friends, hobbies, and practically every arena of their lives. A physician could have 100 patients with acromegaly, but really 100 different illnesses. And because of such, treatment must be individualized and psychological and physiological factors addressed when necessary. How do you feel about this approach? How can we educate physicians to respond to patients individually rather than collectively as a group based on a disease state?
This is an amazing question to ponder. I am aware of several actual movements within general medicine as well as psychology that are really trying to encourage a more individualized approach to treatment. Terms being used more and more include collaborative medicine or integrative medicine. Both of these right now are at the primary care level, but integrate mental health practitioners intimately into each case. The more I learn, the more I'm astounded by the very complexity of the human body and the vast number of responses any individual's body and personality can have. There's just a lot to consider. It's also important to take into consideration not only dis-ease, but also whatever protective factors may exist for any person. Such factors can include those within the very cells of a person's body, but also include such things as socioeconomic factors, age at the time an illness develops, family and social support, and so much more. Personally, I can recall a young woman I met just a few months following her transsphenoidal surgery for Cushing's. Her husband held her hand as I interviewed them for a training video for professionals. She told me her mother was a nurse who was the one who initially saw symptoms that appeared Cushingoid to her. Luckily, her mom was correct, and this young woman found a top endocrinologist and pituitary neurosurgeon. About a year ago, I got a call from her, and she's doing quite well. Not everyone has this level of family support and knowledge to guide them through such an often challenging medical process, nor do they have access to the medical specialists that are necessary to deal with highly specialized issues. This is one of the reasons why I believe a treatment team is so necessary for pituitary disorders, because it is complex and a lot of support on all levels is necessary.
Well, yes, I would totally agree with you on that. I would add that the rate of success for specialists is so much higher than, let's say, for non-specialists. So a team that is also highly specialized, like you're saying, is critical. Now, we know that pituitary disorders are more common than most people, even physicians, are aware of. How can increasing awareness to mental health provider, do you think, could possibly help patients and their families?
I have received several calls and email from patients around the world who've told me they've shared information in my book with their doctors, friends, or relatives. Some tell me doctors don't want to learn about any of this. Personally, I've become rather used to being either ignored or treated by professionals as if I'm speaking a foreign language or that I'm from another planet. Quite honestly, these are highly intelligent professionals, but have closed their eyes and their minds to looking at things in a different light. I really believe that pituitary disorders often need an out-of-the-box perspective. This is why the pituitary centers of excellence have become so important. I know they're not everywhere, however. I believe that we can all spread the seeds of information from, and those little seeds will plant in the ground and grow somewhere. Each of us can be an ambassador of knowledge, and you just never know who or when the message will be heard, and it will make a difference.
Well, I know that awareness will make a tremendous amount of difference in the amount of time it takes to diagnose people. So can you talk about some of the mental health symptoms that commonly accompany pituitary disorders?
I think depression and anxiety are the most commonly associated and reported symptoms. Many Cushing's patients report as they look back, they can often remember signs of clinical depression long before their endocrine levels showed any signs of abnormality. The literature supports, especially for Cushing's, this fact. Of course, any disease or illness in the body can make someone feel sad, especially if they don't know the reason or can't find a doctor who understands. Another example is in Cushing's patients who often gain a lot of weight rapidly. In our culture, weight and body size are often thought in simplistic terms. I've talked with several Cushing's patients who were disgustingly told by their own physicians to literally just stop eating potato chips as their medical solution and refuse to consider any other possibility for the weight gain other than overeating. Only much later and with different physician were they accurately diagnosed. Acromegaly can often cause severe changes to the body, making even family or friends uncomfortable with seeing a different person. I've talked with acromegalics who eventually refused to even leave their own homes because of being teased or just feeling their bodies were not their own. Many patients, either because of poor medical care or lack of emotional support, may even consider suicide as an alternative. I remember one man who I corresponded with and spoke with over the phone because he lived outside of my state of California. His words will forever remain with me because he finally asked me how he could donate his body to medical research, specifically for the study of acromegaly. He was planning to end his life at some point because he was just too mentally, physically, and emotionally tormented. I don't know what happened to him because he stopped contacting me. Mental confusion is also common. For those who are trying to maintain their jobs, this can be extremely difficult and sometimes scary. Other symptoms can include infertility, and although this is a biological issue, it can and does affect not only the individual, but certainly a marriage or relationship, especially if the underlying cause, like a pituitary tumor, is yet unknown. Erectile dysfunction is also an issue that can greatly impact an intimate relationship, and we know that men especially often avoid seeing a doctor until things become too severe. Yeah. Sexual dysfunction can be caused by many things, But whatever the cause, a couple who can discuss and approach it together will fare much better. There are other mental health issues like anger and rage that can occur when hormone levels are out of control, especially right after surgery. We all, of course, are personally responsible for our behavior, and verbal or physical violence is never an excuse. Moods that go up and down seemingly without any reason can wreak havoc on couple and family relationships, and such shifts are commonly found with those with hormonal abnormalities. I've known many people who were diagnosed as bipolar only later to discover that they had a pituitary tumor. Any of these mental health symptoms are serious, and whether hormonally related or not, need to be properly treated with a medical and a psychological eye.
That is such a sad story. Unfortunately, so much more common than we all think things are. And I can honestly, as a person with acromegaly, relate to many of the stories, and particularly the mood swings that you relate to. So medical treatment focuses on patients, but you often write and talk about patients' families as well. Can you tell us about the impact you see on families?
As I've said before, any illness, especially one that is chronic, cannot help but have an impact on the family. What seems different with pituitary disorders in particular is the length of time it so often takes to get a proper diagnosis, and then the often insidious mental health symptoms that neither physicians nor most mental health professionals seem to know how to treat properly. The role of the family, as well as close social relationships, are often critical to any healing process. I believe that any effort to shore up the stability of the family can yield huge payback. Close family members, if they understand the illness or disease, are better able to support compliance with medical treatments prescribed. I want to reiterate here that pituitary patients don't live in a vacuum. Symptoms often do affect relationships, especially when it takes so long to find the underlying cause that it can be just a tiny growth in the head. Marriages are affected, divorces occur, jobs get lost, connections with children and other family members can be strained. That is why it is so important for family, friends, coworkers to get accurate information, and for patients to have help learning ways to talk with those they care about.
Thank you, Linda. Now, let me ask you, since knowledge about the mental health aspects of pituitary disorders is not yet widely known, can you help our listeners know how to find mental health professionals who can be helpful?
Jorge, right now there is no specific place that I can tell you or a website to go to that's guaranteed to find a mental health professional who knows about pituitary disorders, because it is still just largely unknown. However, there are some ways I can recommend to help patients and families find the right therapist or mental health provider. First of all, it is important to know it is appropriate to interview a therapist over the phone. Hopefully they will welcome this. Looking at their website can also provide helpful information. It would be great to find a counselor or therapist who knows about the pituitary, but I doubt that will be easy. It will be easier to find someone who has experience with chronic or serious illness. Next, I think that asking if they are open to learning about specific medical condition is important. You want to work with someone who's curious and does not think they know it all. Finally, I am willing to briefly consult at no charge with professionals as well to send them articles that I might have, as well as my book, of course. And they can contact me. They can contact me through my website, lindaemrio.com.
Well, we certainly will add on our contact information so people can also contact you through Pituitary World News at pituitaryworldnews.com. And with your help, we will continue to publish articles of interest and any new knowledge on this so very critical subject. Are there any final thoughts you want to share with our listeners?
I guess if I can share just one final thing, it's that I'd like to impart hope to your listeners, especially patients and their family members. When I first started researching and then writing about the link between mental health and pituitary disorders over a decade ago, I had a very hard time finding anything in the psychological literature that even mentioned the endocrine system, let alone pituitary gland specifically. Now it's been a couple years after the publication of my book, and I've seen more and more citations referencing the HPA and sometimes the pituitary. World-class doctors like Dr. Blevins took a huge chance by contributing to my book that is so outside the norm because it crossed over the medical-psychological great divide. I am ever so grateful, but I do believe that there is a lot more that researchers and helping professionals can do. Finally, it's important for patients to know that some of us do believe you and do know that this can be confusing and frustrating and heartbreaking at times, but you can also get help to educate and open the eyes of those who need that to see. I was one of those non-believers, so I do know that things can change.
Linda, this has been a wonderful discussion, and I'm sure it's going to be extremely helpful to all of our listeners. So I can't thank you enough for taking the time to do this with us, and it's been wonderful, as well as all of the other articles that you contributed to Pituitary World News. They get a tremendous amount of attention, and we're very happy to make your expertise available to all of our listeners. Thank you so much.
Jorge, I'm the one who's grateful that you allow me to be able to contribute in whatever way I can, and I thank you for all your work as well.